What's up, everybody? This week on the Blurred Lines podcast, Sandeep and I sit down talking about all things nuclear family, marriages, hypocrisy in middle-class India.
Independent living.
Independent
people
living.
Are becoming more Western in their ideas and their way of lives, from their expectations. And where does this meet in this country of contrasting colors, contrasting cultures, and contrasting opinions?
So
the lines will be blurred on this episode.
Yes, they will. So let us know what you guys think in the comments. As always, enjoy this one. It was a lot of fun. Take care.
Live from Bengaluru, India, it's the Blurred Lines podcast with comedians Sanjay Manaktala and Sandeep Rao. Talking about lines that blur Indians. This is Blurred Lines.
What's up, guys, and welcome back to another Blurred Lines podcast, the podcast where two Bangalore boys, stand-up comics and entertainers and writers, talk about the fine lines we all cross here in modern India.
That's right. Why India is suffering from lines that are blurring.
Lines are blurring very much here in India.
Yes. The entire thing is that the typical traditional way Indians were viewing life and how people viewed Indians. Your glass just banged that hard.
Anyway. Oh, my glass just banged the table. Yeah. Sorry, guys. The line was blurred on the border of the table. Yes.
But I think the way Indians are being viewed in the world and how we are viewing ourselves, that's changing a lot.
So take us into with this episode, Sandeep. Well, what are we talking about here?
Well, I'll tell you what I've experienced, right? Now, India was known for a certain kind of value system when it comes to family. Typically, the nuclear family, the strength of the joint family. And typically, Indian kids never kind of moved away from home. They would be at home till they got married, or if, you know, they grew old enough and they still come back to their parents' house. But now this entire concept of independent living is very strong. So you have people moving away from their cities where they grew up, moving away from parents, people traveling abroad, coming back, people within the same city. In fact, people living on their own or with partners and maybe even their husbands or wives. So you see this thing where typically the family was so strong and everything happened within that family, but now it's becoming more Western in its idea that you go away, you visit your family once in a while, you visit your parents on holidays, but for the most part, you are on your own, and this is creating a lot of interesting stuff.
Okay, so take a step back before we continue. Can you define nuclear family for me?
Well, in the conventional sense, it's just parents and siblings. I mean, not their siblings, but parents and kids. But you can actually take it one step further where you'd have, I wouldn't say an extended joint family, but you would have at least like the father, his brother, and then their families living together. That would be a little more of an enhanced nuclear family. But I think just in itself, a nuclear family being the parents and their children.
You mean even after the kids get married? Or
yeah, so typically, you know, you'd see a father, mother, and either the father's...
Two kids until they're 18, 20, 30, whatever.
Even more, like you'd see the father and his parents or the mother and her parents. And then you'd see the kids. And typically what happens is the girl would get married and go to the guy's house. And there it would be a similar situation to what she had at home. But now she's the outsider. But the boy typically would have his wife coming in and living there.
Yeah.
So that isn't the convention. That's not a joint family in India. That's just a nuclear family. Because a joint family, you would have like
three, four
cousins.
Living together.
More even. You'd have like starting from the grandfather. So the grandfather and his brother. So now it breaks down from there where you have their kids and their kids' kids and their kids' wives and all that kind of thing. So it would typically be like a family of 15.
Would 20. You ever want to live with your wife and her parents and in-laws and your parents and your like all everybody and all in one big house?
Nah.
Well, there you go. That's the end of the podcast, everybody.
I mean, no, I wouldn't.
You
because
wouldn't, yeah.
it's that's the point I'm making, right? Because growing up in my house, we had my dad's mother. Because by then my dad's father had passed away. My mom's father was there for some time. Then we had my dad's sister and her husband. And at some point for a little time, my dad's nephew and my parents and then me and my sister. But before we were born, it was even bigger because my father's father was alive, and then all his kids were around, and then the kids' kids, the kids' husbands, not the kids, the my dad's sister's husband.
Okay,
and their
okay
kids.
A bunch of people. I get it. Yeah.
So yeah, so every day, in fact, was fun because they actually had their own gang to hang out with, and lunch was a great occasion because they'd all sit down together. They'd all kind of like have a nice meal. They'd have groups to play with. They'd all go to school together. They'd all go for tuitions together or whatever, like music class. So it kind of was, in that sense, a nuclear family because everyone did things together. And that bond you can see till date, because growing up, every Sunday was lunch at my home where my dad would call all his sisters, cousins, and at least 20 of us would meet every Sunday for lunch.
But I don't think, not to cut you off, but I don't, I'm actually glad that sort of thing is kind of getting less and less. To be not in like a, I don't like family, but what I'm saying is, have you ever tried to get 20 people to eat at the same time, whether it's going to a restaurant or eating at home? You'll pretty much spend half the day.
Not really.
That.
That's the point I disagree on, because we still do it. You know, my kids, if I have kids, might not know that culture. But because for me, it was a weekly occurrence. Like now, sometimes weddings and thread ceremonies where I have to meet like my mom's cousins and all that. I'm like, fuck that.
Not that. What I'm saying
is... Yeah, but I'm saying the lunches. I'm coming to the lunches, right? We have, it's what now, you know, unfortunately, the family is getting smaller. But say my aunt, like my dad's sister, her daughter's visiting from the US. So we make it a point to call them for lunch. And it's at any given point, not 20 anymore, but it's about 10 of us meeting. And we make it a point at least once a month where dad's sisters... and their husbands and kids, and my mother, her brother, sister, and kids.
No, yeah, I'm talking about every day, bro. I'm not talking about
every
once
day.
A month.
Is, no,
I'm
every,
talking someone showering, someone's got to go to the gym, someone has a meeting, someone's hungry.
I don't think
that's impossible.
That doesn't exist anymore.
You can't sustain that everybody has lunch at
that's
the same
why now
time.
You look at a family like that, what they typically do is, you know, someone's running a shop or someone's running a business, so the couple will eat at their TV. You know, and then the father, mother will eat early. Then the kids have to eat a certain time. So it's very, very difficult to coordinate. I agree with you on that front. Yeah.
No, it's funny. Even in America, I think in the 1940s and 50s, when the TV started coming out and then houses start getting designed where the dining room was less as important as the family sitting around the television in the living room. And then couches ended up having tables and the coffee table became your de facto dinner table. The concept of a nuclear family then even started changing. And I think... To your point, it is exciting that as Indians, we hang on to tradition and we like to have our everyone put your phones away on Sunday and eat. Or like you said, once a month, you get 30 of your relatives together and eat and chit chat and all that stuff. Yeah. But I don't think it's something sustainable long term.
I miss it, honestly. That's why I'm talking about it.
Yeah, you
miss
the
conversation. You know, because that's one thing we don't have.
I mean, that's Thanksgiving dinner, basically, right?
That's once a year in America. But we have it every time I go to my wife's parents' house, right? It's not a big...
How often do you go?
We probably once in 10 days.
Okay.
Right? But when we go over, it's they live in a situation where her parents live upstairs. Until recently, you know, Nivea and her brother were there, but they both moved out. And below, on the ground floor, is uncle's brother, his wife, his son, and daughter-in-law. So when we go up there for lunch, they just come around. Everyone comes up, walks in, walks out. We have lunch there. If they've cooked something interesting, something gets sent down, sent up. And then after lunch, we're all just shooting the shit.
It's like you're all sharing a hotel at a destination wedding or something.
Not even, but just like, and there's no force to the conversation. There's no agenda. And until recently, Navi's grandmom was alive. So she just sit on the bed inside because she couldn't walk around.
Sure.
And she's just over here and she'd see the smile on this face. She'd pretend that she's sleeping. Suddenly she's grinning because she's heard some bit of naughty
gossip.
And she's like, and everyone's like, hey, what are you? And he's like, no, I don't want it. So it's really something I miss because I grew up with that, and I grew up with that notion that people can share conversations, and it was very unselfish, you know.
Yeah.
When people would come, it would not be like, you know, I cook this, you eat this. Food is one aspect, right? Because we spoke about this in the last episode, if I'm not mistaken. But this is where kind of food becomes the primary thing, because I remember a lot of gossip where my aunts would start something about, you know, your divorce, very bad and all that. And then that thing would go full circle, come back to how the recipe for rasam is messed up. So it's something I've noticed over and over again.
Yeah.
It's quite amazing how everything breaks down to the proper kind of ratio of turmeric to garlic.
Sure.
Yeah.
No, it's funny because I think that I think we're both on the same page that family is important. I think because maybe my family is a lot smaller than your family. For me, the practicality of getting, and my brother, his wife has a massive family, and they all live together pretty much in the same city.
Right.
So, which means every other day, some cousin's birthday, some kid's birthday, some lunch, some anniversary. No, and I can't. At some point, I just put my hands up. Like, dude, it's so either we all live in the same area and we chit chat and catch up, like the way you said, by proximity, where it's like seeing a neighbor.
Yeah,
basically.
Now you're just doing a hangout.
And yeah, now, but especially now with technology and the fact that, look, I probably see my first cousins in California like once a year, but because I'm so close to them on Instagram and on Facebook, it's kind of sad because I don't even realize I'm not seeing them.
Yeah.
I don't even realize I haven't said happy birthday to their daughter because instead I just liked a photo and I feel like that passes for communication. And in that sense, I feel, I don't know if it's a good thing, the death of the nuclear family, but I feel like the nuclear family is becoming the virtual family and that's going to be in the future.
Well, that's another point, right? Now, when people live alone here, say, for instance, a person from Bombay has moved to Bangalore and work. And, you know, she's probably moved in initially with kind of PG, right? Paid guest accommodation, whatever. So she's obviously being...
Thank you for the dictionary definition.
Is it right? I thought parental guidance, but
I
it's paid
know.
Guest.
I mean, I think our guests, I think our visitors
It's a paid guest, another word for it,
yeah.
But they're kind of overseen and they're kind of protected by the family who's taken them under the wing, right?
Yeah.
And they're like, you know, come home early. They have like restrictions, like a kind of college hostel. But then they move out eventually after a year. They find two, three colleagues at their workplace and they're like, let's get a place together, and they go out party, and then typically they find a guy, and then the relationship goes ahead, and then they find a place on their own. So this progression of, you know, naturally just finding your space has become very common, and I think that's really good because you kind of find what you want from life. You're not limited. A lot of these people come from conservative backgrounds, right? A lot of people come from a thing where like the girl can't go out wearing certain clothes.
Sure.
The boy has to like at a certain point settle down, has to take over the family business. But all that model is breaking down. So a lot of people are experimenting with drugs, with alcohol, with multiple partners. And this is, I think, the transformation which the Indian youth, I'd say, is going through right now, because the parents are conservative. They are sort of growing up with that conservative upbringing, but they are kind of letting their wings spread right now. So I feel the next generation is going to have absolutely no context of conservative upbringing. So it's going to be a very interesting time. For instance, now you look at the kids these days, like the four-year-olds, the babies, right? And a lot of their parents are divorced. A lot of them have single mothers, single fathers. And a lot of those single parents have partners. And those partners change because they're not married, right? So they're growing up with a dad's girlfriend or the mother's boyfriend at home.
Sure.
So they have no idea of family in its conventional, traditional sense.
Of course, but a lot of people also, and you know, I don't know if you would agree, but a lot of the people I know growing up who had very conservative, very tightly wound mothers and fathers who are like, no, going out late, or what are you waiting, or who are you hanging out with? Those people, at least in my experience with people I knew, ended up being the biggest screw-ups. Because
screw-ups in what way? Screw-ups in marriage or screw-ups in
marriage, cheating, drinks, drugs? I mean, drinks is fine. I drink. Drugs is fine. I've done some drugs. But drinks that. But like, but I'm saying they're the ones who, because they had somebody always over their shoulder, whereas
they lash out at some point.
They lash out, but also, you know, a lot of the most protective parents also are super protective also in financial matters and other things. So you take away that freedom for Timmy or Johnny or, you know, Rakesh or whatever.
Timmy or Johnny, where the fuck did that come from?
No, but they're Malu. But
dude,
like,
okay, I'm going to give one more point. Just finish your thought.
No, but my thing is, see, I grew up in a household, and a lot of my friends grew up in a household where their parents were like, either we have no money, figure it out on your own, or do what you want to do, just like don't get a girl pregnant when you're 16 or whatever. And those kids learned at a young age that they're responsible for their own futures. And in my, I mean, they're not rich, stuck up screw ups, or they're not overly protective screw ups. So I feel the parents who try to condition their kids more with religion or with this or with that end up having a lot more rebellion than the ones who naturally will gravitate towards it.
Well, you know, I'm glad you brought this point. It's not about the traditional Indian family, but there is a point which you, it's being consistent in parenting right now. If you're a person,
and none of us are parents, by the way,
none of us are. No, but I've noticed this in parents, right? If you're consistently a religious person and you're religious with your kids and you're religious outside and you're kind of preaching what your belief is, I think that's fine because that's who you are. But I see a lot of hypocrisy in parenting, right? why I say this is when parents go out, they might go for a comedy show or they might go for a party where someone's kid is marrying a guy. It's a gay situation. And they're like, it's amazing. It's so good that he's finally found a partner. And they have all these thoughts that they're liberal there, but they have different value system when it comes to their
own kid. Oh, of course.
Yeah, the hypocrisy
is great. That he's marrying a white guy. And then
when your son says you're gay, you're like, wait, what goes out must come out. Don't put it in.
Yeah. So that is the great, it's so funny. My mom is a massive Sai Baba fan. And
yes.
She has a Satya Sai Baba, the one with the afro, you know. And,
well, okay.
You know, he has a saying, and it's not a religious podcast. We grew up in that kind of household. And we used to get bumper stickers for the back of our car.
Yeah.
And it would say, love all, serve all. That was the, you know, everyone is my brother, my sister, my brother, yeah, like whatever. Yeah.
And Sai Baba Marley.
Sai Baba Marley, yeah. And then one of her friends, who was the like Balvikas, like Bhajan teacher, like basically the leader of that crew in California and wore that on her sleeve, was telling us how she like sent her kid to a new private school. And she was like, Madhu, I have to tell you, it's an amazing school. And we're like, why is it so good? Aside from the fact that it costs, you know, $10,000 a year. And she's like, I must tell you, no Jews and no blacks.
Like, love all.
Yeah. And I was like, Auntie, you just said love all, yeah, serve all.
But there should be a sub note there.
Now you don't want. And first of all, I was like, I know racist aunties are like, racist Indian aunties, especially if you're like Mexican or black in the 80s and 90s, yeah, they had their own persona. I was like, well, where did Jews come from? I was like, I mean,
no, it's crazy, right?
How did brown people become anti-Semitic?
That tagline can be used in a different way. Like you put white people, brown people, love all. You put the Jews and blacks, serve all.
Lord. Yeah, like, man. And that was the first time when
I
started questioning stuff.
I mean, that
brings
to the point which, you know, Indian racism is a thing a lot of people talk about.
It's like Dave Chappelle would say, it's fine. It's a fine wine. It's like...
No, but we have our own notion of racism because for us, it is to do with... we have an obsession with white. So white is always something we must serve.
I only like white wine, to be honest.
So not you. I'm talking about the average Indian.
Uh-huh.
You go to Goa, you
like
sit next to a table.
Or like white people?
White people. Like you go sit in a shack till date in Goa and you sit with your wife or some friends and then a white couple comes and sits. That guy is going to definitely serve the white table better.
Oh, that's what you mean. Like the waiters and stuff.
Not even
like
the waiters, some, but like even you won't mind as much. I mean, now people are like, bastard British. I'm like, dude, that guy's Yugoslavian. Take it easy. Like, not everyone is British, right?
It's so funny. I feel like in Goa, even like the Indian people will like judge even the type of white. So like Russian is at the middle tier. But then if they're like, yeah, Canadian or Australian, you get like a bump up or whatever, you know? Like,
dude, I'll give you a funny story. It's actually nothing to do with this thing. But you know how there's a rule now that you have to stand up for the national anthem in movies, right? In the cinema hall.
Mm-hmm.
So I remember I'd gone with my cousin, her husband, and my sister. So my cousin's husband is Swiss, right? So now the national anthem plays. My cousin has this policy where she doesn't like standing. So she goes out for the duration of the national anthem. I stood up, my sister stood up. And this guy didn't stand up, right? He sat through it. Now, was he disrespectful? Possibly.
White guy.
Yeah, he's a white guy. Okay. Was he disrespectful? Possibly. Should he have just done it because he's in India, respect the kind of, you know, the land you're visiting? Possibly. But leave all that out. It's not a part of the conversation for now. But this guy behind, this Indian guy, gets so angry.
What is this bullshit? You know,
and he's like, I will spit on the British flag. And this guy goes, I am German. Please go ahead. I mean, I don't like British.
He's like, get your flags straight. Get your flag straight.
Yeah, get your flag straight. Even that guy's like, oh, okay.
He's like, I am going for my Schengen visa next week. Yeah,
he's like, I don't think people are used to the Swiss. Right?
That's what I love. I talked about this in my own podcast, which is that Indians are so patriotic outside of India. You know what
Absolutely,
I mean?
Yeah.
Like, especially, I get trolled a lot by people like, what does he know, stupid NRI? I'm like, you're sitting in Chicago.
Yeah.
And I feel like, why do you think Indians who live in Las Vegas, New Jersey, Chicago are so angry on Twitter when you talk shit about India, yet they are not even putting their money where their mouth is? I'm very like, are they trying to make up? Or are they trying to go the extra mile with patriotism
dude,
because they
love,
feel guilty?
We love feeling holier than thou, dude.
But isn't it not holier than thou if you're basically not contributing to your country's GDP? You're sitting outside selfishly making your 100,000, 200,000 overseas.
Absolutely. So I get pissed off with these people home. Who yeah. sit there and go, oh no, I think Swachh Bharat Modi is just corrupt and he's taking and too much money.
And they're sitting in Manhattan enjoying it.
And they're sitting there and going, Trump is so, I'm like, dude, make a fucking decision, right? You want to make the money, you want to make the kind of the most of the situation there. So you're kind of neither here nor there. That's where the confused yeah. desi part comes.
Yeah.
Because they really don't know. And you know another thing about this holier than thou thing,
I loved every time Modi goes to a football stadium in New Jersey to preach to like 50,000 Indians, I just wish he would be like, who's coming back with me?
Yeah.
And then like,
nobody.
All of them are like, yeah, okay, never mind.
Rent in Mumbai is too high.
Yeah, we prefer here in Dallas. Yeah.
Dallas.
Yeah.
But also the Indian man, right? When they travel, I'm not talking about the people who are born, brought up there, not the US citizen Indians, but the typical Indian tourist. They'll go there, they'll probably go to LA and they'll see like, you know,
Hollywood sign and all that.
Like, no, I'm talking about like the average white man, white woman. They're much more comfortable with public display of affection, right? They're holding hands. Smooching. Yeah. They're like, gee, this bloody American culture, very bad. India should not become like
and
this.
And then he'll go on Red Tube later. Yeah.
Not even that. He'll go back home to Bombay or wherever he's from and he'll go with a girl and do shady stuff in the park under a tree.
Yeah. I'm like,
dude, you're just such a fucking cunt, dude.
He's like, it's under the tree, so it's less shady.
Yeah.
More shady.
Embarking up the wrong tree.
But I like how we went from nuclear family.
Yeah, but this all does add up to, because that's what it is. It's just, we call the word nuclear family, we call the concept of a family, but this all kind of filters down to the family value, right?
Yeah.
Now, I'm not saying the family value, it's important to have a strong family, because sometimes for a child as a person, I mean, as a person who doesn't have a child, it's easy for me to make this comment, but I really feel sometimes it's better to have a family where the parents are divorced and the child gets kind of love from both sides than that child being traumatized living with parents or abusive to each other.
No, I wish, and I grew up in a divorced household, and I wish for the marriages that don't work out, parents would actually suck it up and teach their kids the proper lesson, because there's nothing worse.
And don't stay together because you're scared that, oh my God, my kids, what will happen to my kids? Because honestly, if you're fighting every day with your wife or your husband and you're just being selfish going, but what will society think or what will happen to my kids or custody issues, you're in fact in the long run creating more damage on the child just to save your marriage and save your image.
So let me ask you something. We're going on a little tangent here about relationships. That's what we always do. That's the podcast attitude. But we're going to wrap it up pretty soon. But a lot of our friends, I'm sure a lot of us, both of us maybe in previous lifetimes, have probably have been in relationships, or maybe I don't think any of us are at luck, you know, God bless, touch wood, knock on wood, where it's more effort to stay in it than to exit, right?
Absolutely.
Where, and I think a lot of Indian marriage, a lot of marriages in general, let me finish, where it's just, no, you should man up and you should learn how to deal with this, and real marriage takes work. But it's like, how much work, dude? Like, I mean, if you're literally tiptoeing around somebody for 90% of the next 20 years, is it really worth it? Or would you rather just deal with society for 6 months and get the divorce and then just be happy for the rest of your life?
Absolutely, like, man. I mean, those are two different situations, right? Now, if it's a failed marriage, it's a failed marriage. If it's going nowhere.
How do you
nowhere,
know if it's a failed marriage? Isn't it going nowhere also a failed marriage?
I mean, that's the same thing as a failed marriage, right?
Yeah.
What I mean by that is, if you're making an effort, you're doing counseling, you both have worked on yourselves, but sometimes there's just no connection left. Now, if you're going to stay in it just for the kids, and there's another stupid thing people do. They have a first child, they get into a fight or whatever, things don't work out as well, it's a rocky boat. Now, to make things better, they have a second child, thinking the second child will help.
Oh, God, no.
That is just fucked up and unfair on the child.
Yeah.
You're bringing in a life into a situation which isn't healthy for anyone.
Yeah.
Now, the point is, if you're working on things, there is a, you know, sometimes it takes longer for certain couples to deal with their issues. Some couples just go, you know what, we were living like fools. We made a decision. Now let's just suck up our egos and let's share the reasons why we got married, which is companionship, respect, and love for each other.
Mm-hmm.
So that kind of situation works because you think. But if there's a complete disconnect and there's absolutely nothing left when it comes to common ground, common appreciations, or even respect, or that's the main thing. There's no respect left for the person. Then you're just staying in it for like, oh, the kids. But the kid is like a dog. You can sense that negativity. You can sense that tension.
Do a lot of your friends who have divorced, and I don't have too many friends who are divorced that have kids.
I don't hang out with divorcees. Fuck them. Losers.
They're too happy. Are your friends who are divorced who have kids, are they generally happier post-divorce? Indian people especially.
You can't put a you know, broad stroke on that, because some of them are because they got out of a situation which wasn't good. Some of them are still confused and holding on, And some people are just very lost as individuals. So this is something I'm going to say, and I tell a lot of people. It's not like I go around counseling people. But yeah, if you're
guys,
not,
this advice is unsolicited. We are not sponsored by...
It is awesome advice.
By
and
the Indian
I live by
psychiatrist.
It.
Or well, I don't know the difference between a psychiatrist and a psychologist. But anyways,
I live by this. Yeah. If you're not happy alone, you're never going to be happy with someone else.
I agree, dude. Yeah. If you can't make yourself happy, you definitely can't make anybody else happy. Yeah. So
that is another take on it.
So
don't get in a relationship to make your life better, because yes, everyone has issues, but if you haven't even made an effort to come to terms with even the fact that you have an issue, don't go into a relationship, into a marriage, and say, hey, she'll make me feel better, because no, that person comes with their own baggage.
Don't find somebody to make you happy. Just find somebody who makes you happier.
Yeah. Once you're happy, you find someone and things usually will kind of be better than two unhappy people trying to make their lives better by finding each other, because that just gets really messy really quickly.
Don't find somebody who changes you. Find somebody who improves you.
Yes, and find somebody who has lots of change, because cash helps.
Yeah, yeah. Be the change you want to see in somebody else. That was, who was that?
That was, I think, Walmart.
But anyways, guys, that's it for this week on the Blurred Lines podcast.
That's right.
I think, you know, nuclear family, not nuclear family, just know you want to get out of it. Call out hypocrisy when you see it in your families. Don't be scared of westernization or ruining of Indian culture. Ultimately, you're all smart, you're all good people, and the line is blurry on these things, but do what you know is right.
Indian family has gone from setting lines to snorting lines.
To setting lines, to snorting lines.
Yes.
I don't know what else is the Indian family doing?
That's pretty much it, man. If you're...
We just started doing affairs now in the Indian marriages, so that's good.
Oh, that's fun. Let's talk about that in the next
one. Yes. Day. Yeah, yeah. It's actually...
You go on Tinder and you see this traditional Gujju auntie whose name on Tinder is Double Fisting Deepa.
So what'd you say? Sorry?
You see Gujju aunties on Tinder with like names like Double Fisting Deepa.
Oh, Lord. I was like, yeah, we were clean almost for 24 minutes, 25 minutes. Yeah. Right,
but
let me ask you before, do you think more affairs happen in India as a percentage than in the West?
In secret, of course.
I mean, secret or not secret.
Of course they do. Of course
you
they
think
do.
More? Because over there it's more public, or what do you mean?
I mean, it definitely is on a rise. I don't know numbers. I don't know stats.
Yeah.
But it is definitely
when you go for your weekly meeting with the cheating husbands, what do they say? Anyways, guys, we're signing off.
Cheating Husbands Anonymous. No, but definitely on the rise, because a lot of the people in the 50s and 60s. We'll talk about that in the next episode, but a lot of people in the 50s and 60s, as we discussed earlier, the conservative parents, grandparents, they feel like unleashed animals. So in the next episode, boys and girls, we'll talk about cheating bastards.
Yeah.
Aunties gone wild.
On the Blurred Lines podcast.
Yes.
Thank you, guys.
Thanks for listening.
You've been listening to the Blurred Lines podcast with Sanjay Manaktala and Sundeep Rao. Don't forget to rate and subscribe and tune in next week for a brand new episode. This is Blurred Lines signing off.
Goodbye.